Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I probably need to make a statement right off the bat because you're probably listening to this episode just after I have returned from the IT Owners Compass in Chicago. However, I am recording before the conference. And I can see that my schedule is going to be tight, and I am scheduling this to be released hopefully the Monday after the conference, if not that Monday, as soon after as possible. But I already know that time is going to be short, but this episode, which features Charles Armour from App River, is going to be a great interview, but we are recording it before the conference, and it'll probably be released afterwards, so if you're hearing this after the conference, wondering where is the After the Conference podcast, they are coming. And I say they because I have a feeling there is going to be more than one. It is going to be a great conference in Chicago. We are going to have some great sessions where we're going to be doing breakout groups, being able to meet and exchange ideas with our peers. We're going to have some great speakers and expert sessions and some vendors. So it should be a great conference. The keynote speaker, Michael Michalowicz, actually he goes by Mike. That's how I talk to him. Mike Michalowicz, who is the author of the books Profit First, Pumpkin Plan, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. I have read the Pumpkin Plan. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that know the story of me firing my customer, I got the idea from Mike Michalowicz and the Pumpkin Plan, so we can talk more about that later. But we're also going to hear from our good friends at Malware Bytes, and I am looking forward to a presentation by our good friend Jason Miller on Freedom Voice. You know, I don't sell voice over IP, but I might. Freedom Voice looks nice and easy, so there's a thought. So just a little bit later, we're going to hear from Charles Armour from App River, and there may be one other episode that comes out after the IT Owners Conference, and that is from Jefferson Pike, who is with Fortalice Solutions, and Fortalice Solutions is the security group that is led by our good friend that we had from the ASCII event down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Teresa Payton. You may know her from the TV show Hunted on CBS. She was also previously the CIO at the White House, a huge, huge voice in the area of cybersecurity. And so I was able to get Jefferson Pike from Fortalice to talk with us about security tips, the state of ransomware, and all of that stuff. So, you know what? I'm going to skip our normal housekeeping stuff. And I'm going to go ahead and get to the interview. And then after the interview, I'll come back, do the housekeeping stuff, and we'll close out the show. So ladies and gentlemen, after these messages, I'll be back with Charles Armour and App River.
Hi, I'm Dave Mungai, SecureSurf Product Manager here at App River. Today, we're going to be talking about our SecureSurf Web Protection Service. We're very excited about SecureSurf, and here's why. It's the smartest, most cost-effective way to protect your network and your employees from web-based threats. We don't make that statement lightly. That's because security is part of App River's corporate DNA. We cut our teeth with a service that keeps spam and viruses out of your mailbox, but the threats have become much more broad and sophisticated. Nowadays, much of the malware we're seeing is actually being delivered by malicious websites. And all it takes is one employee going to one bad site to infect your network and expose your data to cyber criminals. Think of the web as an unlocked back door to your office. SecureSurf is the smart cloud-based service standing guard outside. With SecureSurf, only sites that are safe and that you consider appropriate are allowed on your network, and it can also protect your remote and offsite users. The bottom line is that malware can rob your company of sensitive customer data and inappropriate web use can cost you unnecessary time and money. SecureSurf allows your company to use the web productively, efficiently, and most of all, safely. For more information about SecureSurf or any of our other services, give us a call. We look forward to hearing from you.
All right, listeners, welcome back once again to PodNuts Pro, the interview portion of our podcast. And this time I am joined by Charles Armour, the enterprise, well, not the enterprise, but an enterprise architect at River. He has been there what it looks like about 5 years, give or take. But Charles, it looks like you've got a nice little history of being a software engineer at a variety of companies, developing some services for mobile games, utilities, health and fitness software. Looks like you were a VP of systems operation that had a place where you managed over 500 servers. So you've been at this game for a little while.
Certainly have a little bit of experience working at scale.
Okay. So the question I really want to ask that I wasn't a part of your bio, but what is NeedTagger?
NeedTagger was actually a startup worked on, you know, about 5 years ago, actually, that basically boiled the ocean with Twitter. We took all the tweets that happened at any point in time, and we'd go through all of those tweets, and we'd do what's called sentiment analysis on them. So basically we'd look for words that people were happy or words that people were sad or mad and things like that. And we also looked for intent signals, which was basically, hey, I want to buy something, or I want to, you know, get something replaced or something like that. And what NeedTagger did is it went through and, you know, from all these tweets, it would tag the tweets that people were talking about, you know, products that they wanted to buy or that they were having problems with, maybe that they were in the market for a new car or things like that. And the whole play was basically for salespeople to be able to leverage that huge flow of people just talking about, you know, what they want to buy and what they're thinking about on Twitter to sell to them. It was all, you know, geolocated and things like that. So it was really just a huge sales tool that boiled all of Twitter down into, you know, actionable tweets.
So I was looking at this thinking, ooh, I wonder if this could help me use the Twitter, because I'm relatively new to the Twitter, but it looks like it's more, as you mentioned, more for sales, things like that. But it also looks like this is done, like you guys are no longer accepting customers for this product.
Yeah, we actually did fold NeedTagger about 5 years ago. The product was fantastic, worked very, very well, but it did not find a very good fit in the market. It turned out that most salespeople didn't want to spend extra money to turn up, you know, sources on Twitter that they didn't necessarily have a connection to in order to communicate with. So a lot of our, you know, early adopters and things, they ran into the, well, I'm just reaching out to people on Twitter and trying to sell them something, and that's not working very well. So while the technology was quite excellent and did its job, there really wasn't a very good fit for it in, you know, today's social media world.
That's a shame, because I saw that. I was thinking, ooh, that would be nice, but maybe it'll come back someday.
Certainly.
Okay. So let's get started with what we were going to talk about today, and that is AppRiver's SecureSurf Web Protection product. And I've been interviewing a few people at AppRiver for about the last year, and the listeners are always wanting to ask more technical things. And I've had a few questions specifically about SecureSurf because they want to compare them to some of the other servings that are out there, the other, you know, DNS filter programs and stuff like that. So I reached out and said, hey, can you get me somebody who can help it explain this? Not just from the product overview level, but maybe from the tech behind it. So let's start with what is SecureSurf?
Sure. As you mentioned earlier, SecureSurf is a DNS web protection platform. Basically, what it does is it allows you to use the SecureSurf platform as your DNS server. And in doing so, it's going to filter out any kind of bad websites or, you know, malicious websites, not just bad.
It also allows you to control
the access of your users to certain types of websites, you know, by category and things like that.
Right.
But for the most part, it's designed to prevent your users from going to malicious websites that might do a drive-by virus install, or, you know, that might pop up a bunch of ads that tell them that they've got viruses and they need to install, you know, antivirus software or something like that. SecureSurf really just tries to protect your general users while they're using the web and keep them from going to those negative websites.
Right. And this is something that is actually outside of the customer network. There's no hardware to install. It's all at the cloud DNS level, right?
Exactly. We implemented it at the cloud level to make it really easy for customers to, you know, turn on the service and implement it at multiple locations and things like that. We don't require any hardware. You really just go in either on your individual computers or on, you know, domain controllers and such, update their DNS settings, change a couple settings on our control panel, and you're good to go.
Okay. So what about if you want to do something as granular as user control? Is there a component to that or an agent to install?
We are actually just about to release a new agent. We had an agent about a year ago, and we decided to discontinue that. We're having some issues with it, and of course, users don't want to run into any issues with computer, right, with software on their computers. So we've actually redeveloped it, put together a whole new architecture for it, and are getting ready to release it, and we call that our VPT client.
Okay. And that will be an actual install for, now is it going to be for all devices or mobile devices, or how is that going to work?
At first, we're targeting Windows devices, either laptops or, you know, your desktops and things like that. But we do have plans to support mobile devices and other operating systems.
Okay. Because, of course, that's going to be the big thing. Everybody wants to have their mobile clients protected somehow. Because I know the big complaint always is you use these for a network, and then if somebody leaves the network, they lose that protection.
So certainly, and that's exactly what the VPT client was designed to address.
Okay. Now, I do want to clarify one quick thing, because the people seem to always confuse the spam lab in the App River portal, which is really more email-based. This is completely separate from that, correct?
Yes, it's a completely separate offering. At App River, you can obviously, you know, get both of those products together as one package, but the SecureServe product is totally separate, and you know, we install it and administer it separately. Although you can get to it and you know, change your settings via the same control panel. But SecureServe protects the web, whereas SecureTide protects your email.
Okay. All right. So back to SecureTide, SecureServe. So you can do policies, I guess, for the different networks and different users when you get to that level?
Yes.
Monitor web usage. So is that something where you can actually produce reports based
on
web
usage? Not only reports, we have real-time logging capabilities on the platform. So on a, you know, weekly basis, you can receive a report that'll give you a good idea of you know, what people are visiting and you know, where their traffic is all going. But also on a, you know, less than 5 minutes after it happens, you can go into the customer portal and check out all the logs of all the requests that have happened from your network.
Okay. And I assume those are pretty reports that you can download in PDF form?
You can download the threat report and the network threat analysis in PDF. The logs, of course, you can export as CSV files.
Okay. And there are a couple of different levels that you can purchase with this, but one of the things that's included is a free monthly network threat analysis. Can you describe what that analysis is?
Sure. What that analysis is, it's the PDF that I'm talking about. And either on a monthly or a weekly basis, you can get an update on this PDF. And it has global threat statistics, which gives you an idea of, you know, total across the entire SecureServe platform, how many malware websites we're protecting against, how many people have tried to visit those, and so on and so forth. And it also gives you a comparative analysis of your traffic and your company's traffic. So you can see, you know, how you compare with, say, you know, the world with the traffic analysis, or with the traffic that you're using.
Okay. Hopefully we're not going to
probably
have
a little confused there.
Well, that's not what I was thinking. I was thinking there's hopefully never a scenario where your statistics are more than the world's statistics, but.
Well, definitely. And the statistics that we provide are intended to be, you know, an overall global view to compare against your, you know, company view.
Right.
And of course, also with the network threat analysis, threat analysis also occurs weekly and can give you a lot more information about which particular threats are threatening your network the most. For instance, you might see you know, a very large malware, say a mining website that does Bitcoin mining over JavaScript. Those are usually considered malicious, but you might see that your users are actually going to not so malicious websites, possibly just, you know, advertising networks and things like that. That gives you an idea of, you know, quite how bad your users are.
Okay. Some of the users are pretty bad.
Yep.
So I guess
another thing that comes out of the network threat analysis is actually real-time threat alerts that come from the platform, so that when one of your users actually goes to a malicious website or would go to a malicious website, we block that and then immediately send the administrator an email that says, hey, this user went to this website. It's known to be malicious. They probably have an infection. You should go in and clean that up for them.
Is that something where you can, I guess, in a sense, tailor which alerts you get so that you're not getting every alert every time somebody tries to go to a site? Or do you have a granular list that you can do of certain sites or certain level of threat, I guess?
We have certain levels, and the actual notifications are sent when we hit what's called a critical threat. They're called critical threat notifications. And what that means is that the website that a computer tried to reach from within your network, we know that the only reason that your computer would try to reach that website is because it's a command and control center, or because it's trying to download the extra files for virus install or something like that. So with those, we know exactly what's going on, and we know that there's an infection on the computer. So while we notify of those every time, we do, of course, make sure that we don't notify you too often. It is a 4-hour kind of notification. And not just email, you can also get a text message on your phone. Okay. That works really well for administrators that might be out and about.
Well, especially if the site's, I guess, a ransomware type of site or something like that, I'd want to get that pretty quick.
Exactly.
So in terms of the protection that you guys built, I know that some other programs out there, while they tout it as their server, they're actually using, you know, some other technology underneath, you know, like some companies are layered on top of a web root or something like that. Do you guys have technology underneath your stuff? Or I know that you guys have been in the game a long time, so I'm thinking maybe you've kind of built some stuff yourself?
We do, actually. We built the entire platform out. It's all SecureSurf and AppRiver specific technology. There aren't any other components, really. We do, of course, get data sources from third parties, but for the most part, actually entirely, the platform is our own creation. And that said, WebRoot and things like that, we are pretty conscious about making sure that our platform is distributed and redundant and very high performance compared to a lot of the other systems. We're actually trying to get into, let's say, the Cloudflare regime of performance.
All right. So, of course, one of the questions I get is, how fast is it?
The baseline response time, and mind you that this is a full filtering and logging platform, is about 5 milliseconds. So Okay. You can get a DNS response out of the platform in 5 milliseconds, added on to your latency to whatever data center you may be going to.
All right.
We typically see, sub 20 millisecond latency, about the same as you'd see from using Google or Cloudflare, actually.
I was going to say, that's about as much as a DNS lookup or less sometimes.
Definitely.
All right. So I know we've got a bunch of other stuff technical, but I want to get this one question in and kind of get that answer out of the way, because, DNS filtering is something where it's not cheap in terms of, people look at least the technicians that I work with that are doing managed services, and they're trying to get, services, as cheap as a dollar a user or something like that. This is not, it's not expensive. I don't want to make it sound like that. But the question everybody always asks, is it worth it?
We certainly feel like it's worth it, because, of course, it's not worth anything until it protects you from something that's gone wrong. And one of the first things that I would point out to a new and upcoming customer is, turn on our critical threat notifications, let it run for a week. And then the first time that you actually get that notice that, hey, one of these computers is infected, that pays for a lot more than the dollar a person. That's the killer feature that actually makes it worth a whole lot more. Besides that, we actually have quite a higher level of logging and support that we provide with our services. Of course, AppRiver is known for our phenomenal support, but the logging subsystem on the platform is probably the best out there. It's incredibly performant. And while we try to not be a, say, Big Brother platform, we have a lot of features in the platform to prevent people from being Big Brother. It is a very capable platform and does give you exactly what all of your customers or users are doing.
And just to point out, I know that from talking to my sales rep that the network threat analysis is actually something you can turn on for a customer free for 30 days before they actually buy their product. So you can show them ahead of time whether it's worth it or not.
Indeed, yes. And people are usually very surprised when they see the numbers that come out of those about, you know, how many websites we blocked for their users, or how many critical threats they encountered and things like that. It's usually a big eye opener. And one of the main differentiators, besides the support, besides, you know, the logging and all of that, is just that the platform has an immense amount of data feeding it. We have the best lists in the world. We know all the bad websites, and we're very good about maintaining those and keeping those updated over time. That's really our core competency at AppRiver, both for the Spam Lab and for SecureSurf.
All right. So another thing I want to ask about is the fact that a lot of the listeners, we are big proponents of the firewall and UTM devices. And a lot of these devices now have services built in where, you know, we'll stop the intrusion prevention and we can do content filtering inside the firewall and stuff. So usually the DNS filter is something that is just layered on top of the firewall. But a lot of techs are under the impression that I don't need the DNS filtering because my firewall does it all. And, you know, what can you say about that?
Well, your typical firewall is not going to have all of the analysts and all the people working behind it to feed it new information about all these emerging threats. One of the things that we see on a day-to-day basis is hundreds to thousands of new websites and URLs that are, you know, threats to your users. And unfortunately, anything that updates on a, you know, once a day basis isn't going to be able to keep ahead of those. So your typical firewalls and UTM devices, even if they're doing a DNS filter on top of them or it's built into them, they're not getting updated data on a fast enough cadence to actually react to all these new and emerging threats. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., we're going to have hundreds of new domains added to the platform. And if firewall doesn't update every 5 minutes, it's not going to be able to keep up with those types of things.
5 minutes. Some don't update.
We actually run far lower latencies for most of our updates.
Well, I was just going to say some firewalls don't get updated every 5 months. So
exactly. And of course, domain names can be registered on a day-by-day basis or even an hour-by-hour basis. New ones come out all the time. So we have a real-time system that analyzes them as we see them and graylists them and make sure that, you know, we limit the impact any of those bad domains might have.
Right. So keeping along the firewall trend and the fact that when people set up networks with DNS pointers at the network, a lot of the traditional stuff can be thwarted by somebody just simply changing their own DNS entries on their computer and stuff. Is there a way that this can kind of combat that if we, you know, put SecureSurf on a network for a client?
Sure, there's a couple of different ways to do that. Obviously, the easiest way on a network is to firewall DNS requests at the edge of the network and then require all the DNS requests to go through like your domain controller or something like that. That's a good way to enforce it on a private network. But also, if you need to enforce it on an individual user basis, you could just take their permissions away so they can't change their DNS settings.
Right.
But you can also install our upcoming VPT client, and that VPT client actually maintains control over the DNS settings on the computer and makes sure that they don't update them if they're not allowed to. There's actually a setting that you can change called Can User Disconnect? And if they're allowed to disconnect, then yeah, they can change their DNS settings and they can turn off SecureSurf filtering for their individual computer. But if that's set to not allow it, basically the daemon runs. If they don't have permission to close it or change their settings on their computer, like local administrator, then it makes sure that everything's secure and that the user can't interact with it or change it.
That sounds fantastic.
We thought that was a pretty good feature to add in there.
All right. Let's see here. Let me go through some questions here. I think we did hit all the technical stuff, right? Was there anything that you wanted to add technically that I didn't ask about?
Well, there is the one question about an actual browser redirect bug that was a while back, but I think that's going to come up a little bit later.
I was going to bring that up later, but let's go ahead and bring it up now since you brought it. So the reason I added that is because your product is called SecureSurf, but there was actually a redirect called secure-surf.net.
We were aware of that, and it got added to our list very quickly. Definitely was not sanctioned, and definitely wasn't us. It's unfortunate that anybody can register any domain that they want to, and that they managed to use our name for it. But we did protect all of our customers pretty much immediately against that threat, and of course more.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking it really wasn't too bad of a hit. I don't remember there being any backlash or anything like that, but you're right. What can you do when anybody can register anything?
Well, mostly what we do is we say, hey, analysts, add secure-surf.net to our list and make sure that it's always blocked.
There you go. So let me go back up to and make sure we get all our questions answered. So, of course, somebody asks, you know, does it really help stop phishing attacks? And I guess that's because I know, again, going back to the UTM appliances where they're supposed to block all that stuff, but yet it always gets through. But I know that the website says that this will help stop phishing attacks.
Very much. Much like we keep a list of all of the domain names that have malware or command and control centers or things like that on them, we also keep a list of domain names that have phishing complicity, meaning like we've seen phishing emails that have linked to those domains, or we know that there's landing pages on those domains trying to get people to log into their Google account or something like that. When we see that, we immediately add them and block that domain. So even if a user does get phished and they click on the link from within the email, provided maybe the email got passed through our filters because the new website came out before we had a chance to look at it, we'll block them from actually going to the website when they click.
So does this actually, I just was thinking, I had a show a couple of weeks ago where we actually talked about the sextortion emails that came out where they were saying, hey, I've got your password. I know you went to porn sites. Give me $7,000. Does that fall under that category? Or?
Well, I would imagine that a couple of those websites that like have the interfaces that are telling you that you're on a porn site and, you know, putting your credentials and things like that, they're almost definitely blocked by our platform.
All right. Okay. And another thing that your site mentions is that this actually can help with regulatory compliance requirements. So I wanted to ask about that.
Sure. That would be, and I don't want to get into legal murky waters here, but that would be like SOX compliance and things like that. Mm-hmm. You do have to run endpoint protection on your computers, basically to make sure that they aren't getting taken over every website that you go to. So SecureSurf does provide a convenient check mark for that box, so far as being compliant with security requirements. Everything from PCI compliance for the payment card industry to things like Sarbanes-Oxley.
Okay. And just going through my list of questions now, here was a question that I didn't get to you earlier. There was a question about in the reporting feature that you can print out for everybody. And the question is basically, can it filter out all the traffic in the reports for Microsoft, Adobe, et cetera, for updates? Where I know if we go into a lot of the reports and we just get a report of usage, you know, the top 10 are always going to be stuff that we really don't need to know about. They're Microsoft updates, they're, you know, Adobe updates, they're content delivery sites. You know, those aren't the things we want to see as the top usage items.
Sure. And actually, that sounds like a fantastic addition to the platform. Right now, we do not have the capability of filtering out what appears inside of the reports. They're basically, here's your data. But that does sound like a really good idea for a feature.
All right. So when that gets put in, chip me off my 10%.
Will do. And then I'll have to take my 5 out first.
And then I'll give 1% to the guy who asked the question, and I'll be happy.
Works for me.
All right. Let's see here. I think we asked most of the questions here. Now, I know we can't really get into the money stuff, but and I know people are going to ask, so I'll just bring it up. I know that there is a per domain and a per user cost, correct?
Well, SecureSurf doesn't require domains. It's a per user only. Okay. And basically, it's like a $25 setup fee. But as you mentioned earlier, we do have a 30-day trial that you can go under. The 30-day trial is great because you will get one of those threat reports at the end of that 30-day trial, which will tell you exactly what happened. And we're going to add a feature to that so that it filters out Microsoft. And of course, you know, on the per user, we are, you know, still looking at about $2.95 or $3 a piece, I believe.
Okay. All right. And with that, so when, I don't know if you can answer this, but I guess in terms of if it's at the cloud-based level, how are the users calculated in terms of what's going to, you know, count against your cost? Is it, you know, any device that connects, is that cost, or do you actually set up a user count?
Sure. We do set up a user count, and that's specific to the new VPT client. Okay. Every user is allowed 3 devices per on the VPT client. We're expecting that to be, you know, a desktop and a laptop and a mobile device. Okay. And so far as networks, which are, you know, classic protection way or classic method of protection, we ask you how many users approximately are going to be on the network, and you pay according to that. We do require you to be honest with that, you know, about how many you're using. But in general, you know, a single network, you know, 10 users, totally fine. We don't enforce a certain number of users on a network because we can't actually tell how many users are on the network except in really general terms. Right. So we look at it as, here's a network. Oh, well, you want 5 networks. I don't think you have 5 users on 5 networks. So maybe you should have, you know, more users per network. But in general, it goes down to the per user is really just for the VPT client.
Okay. All right.
And you don't have to buy a domain, but there does have to be an account.
Right. Okay. Nice. All right. Let me move on to, you guys just put out a global security report. And if I remember correctly, those will talk about the cyber threat trends. And does that have any information that applies here to the SecureSurf?
Well, it certainly does. The global security report that we put out is actually done by our analysts. And our analysts are the guys that actually sit there and look at all these domains and look at all the lists and things like that. And I think in general, they're pointing out that, you know, there's a lot more phishing going on. There's a lot more spear phishing going on where people are being much more specific to it. And that global threat report is actually something that we use to guide what features we're going to put into the platform. For instance, we turn up a little bit of the blocking on phishing websites because we know that they're a bigger threat these days, meaning a site has a higher probability of being considered a phishing site, even if it might have other characteristics that aren't phishing, and so on and so forth. So really, the analysts, while they do produce that report, they give us a lot of information about the current threats and how to respond to them.
Okay. So I'm looking at the report now, and I don't know if you can answer this, but it just stuck out at me. Where the title says weaponizing obscure file extensions.
Oh yeah.
And I'm looking at here like silk files were being used and things of that nature. I mean, for people who, one, aren't going to go to this and read it themselves, but what is weaponizing file extensions?
Weaponizing file extensions is really just using file extensions that people don't expect. For instance, everybody knows that a .lnk file is going to be a link and that can have malicious content in it that could run a command on your computer, install something like that. At the same time, same thing with .com files. However, there are a lot of extensions that are executable type of files that like Windows will try to load automatically. And by using those extensions inside of emails, it's a lot easier to get a person to open a file that might be malicious to them.
Hmm. Especially if they don't recognize the extension and they'll think, oh, well.
They just double click on it to see what Windows says to open it with.
Which is funny because Windows now does try to open everything before. That's it. I love that.
Precisely. And now with Windows, also, it will do scanning of the very first part of a file when it opens it in order to try and figure out what type of file it is, even if the extension doesn't exist, which can be really dangerous in some situations.
Well, that's interesting. So it could actually be opening up the file that it's trying to scan and allowing malicious content to.
I'm not sure that the file type scanner would allow malicious content to run. Obviously, there could be bugs inside of it. But really what it does is it says, oh, this file ends in .ba. But when I look inside of it, it's a .com file. So I should just run it like an executable.
Oh, okay.
And so on and so forth. Obviously, you know, there's still UAC and, you know, content protections and things like that that run on Windows and other operating systems. But that is a circumvention to it. And a lot of users will, once again, click through. They love to click through.
Which is where the partner product to this, SecureTide, comes in.
Sure.
Having the mail filter blocking that type of stuff.
Exactly. Right. And we do quite a bit of phishing prevention and link filtering, or file filtering, in the SecureTide platform.
Okay. All right. And one last question that I found here is, how do you handle HTTPS traffic, where a lot of times HTTPS is not being inspected?
Sure. We have just actually are getting ready, along with the VPT client, we're launching a new version of our SSL inspection technology. And that's exactly what it sounds like. It's a SSL inspecting proxy. SSL inspection is our term for being able to generate certificates that your computer will trust when you're going to a website, and proxying all the communications through our servers. We do that, obviously, to make sure that when a website, say Dropbox.com, has a lot of user-provided content, maybe some viruses that you could download from certain URLs on it, and so such things like that, we can still allow you to use the Dropbox.com website, but we can block those individual URLs that would be malicious for you. In order to do that, of course, Dropbox uses SSL, so we have to get in between in the conversation and actually look at the URLs that your browser or computer is requesting.
Hmm. So is that going to be something that is going to become more difficult to manage? Part of me is thinking, with the new Google requirements and everybody having to have new certificates done, but also all of these programs like Dropbox and OneDrive, where they're actually trying to bypass admin control and giving the control directly to the user. I mean, that's to me, that's a perfect reason why you put a DNS filter in place.
Sure. And a DNS filter will do a lot to prevent, users from using products that you don't want them to, or websites that you don't want them to at all. The complexity, of course, comes in when you want them to be able to sort of use the website. You know, you want them to be able to use some of the content on a website, but not all of it. You don't want them to be able to get to that bad content on the website. And in situations like this in Dropbox, where a user might be trying to access a website legitimately, trying to get normal content off of it, but we know that there's bad content on there. If that user, like let's say that Dropbox decided to do certificate pinning on their platform, so that the Dropbox client wouldn't talk to the Dropbox servers without a specific certificate on it. Obviously, any interception of the SSL is going to change that certificate, and then Dropbox stops working. So at one end, you know, it's just a, hey, do you want the product or not? And in situations where they're using certificate pinning, it's an all or nothing. You either get connections to the website or the web service that that product is using, or you block it entirely. But in situations where people aren't using certificate pinning and aren't trying to, you know, lock users and admins out of, you know, the communications of their software, in that situation, we can filter properly and differentiate the bad links from the good links, even on the same domain.
Hmm. Wow. That sounds like a lot of work.
It's quite difficult, and there's a lot of other, you know, vagaries to it, such as HSTS, which is HTTP strict transport security. That's actually exactly the same thing. It's like a generic or always on certificate pinning for a website. It'll actually get your web browser to pin the certificate for an individual website, and we run into a little bit of trouble with that, but have been doing quite a bit to work around it.
So off script here, it sounds like you get to see a lot of bad stuff out there.
Way too much bad stuff.
I was gonna say, what's the one bad story you can share that was just ridiculously bad, or I guess ridiculously threatening, that you guys have had to deal with recently?
Oh, a ridiculously bad or threatening event. We don't actually have a lot of those that happen here at the office or anything like that.
You guys are too
we do
good.
Occasionally have customers call in, trying to think if I can come up with any that wouldn't be giving anything away.
No bad ransomware or...
Well, and that's the beauty of it, is that there aren't a whole lot of instances of that happening with our platform, because obviously they're running our platform and keeping that ransomware off of their computers. It would have been 18 months ago was the last time that we actually had a ransomware that went through on one of our customer systems. And that was a fairly interesting one, because that ransomware actually was installed by the customer.
Oh, Like literally,
we found the ransomware on their computer, and it did manage to encrypt everything. But somebody had actually gone in and physically plugged in the USB drive and started the ransomware application. It was an internal threat. You know, it was your worst threat actor is going to be your employees. And that's what that actually ended up being. That said, you know, we saw that event. We saw it calling out to its command and control systems. And we said, oh, you know, we blocked those calls to the command and control systems. And that kept that computer from being, you know, fully locked down. It didn't actually delete the key off of it, so they could get all the data back, which is really cool.
So I'm trying to ask delicate questions here without getting you in trouble, but was this intentional or accidental?
This was, I believe, intentional on the part of the customer's employee that did it.
Wow.
So they were being, you know, a normal threat actor and the internal one, and they came in with ransomware, thinking that they could get it on the computer without anybody noticing or being able to, you know, prevent it. And sure enough, they did get it to run on the computer. But then once it did encrypt everything on that computer and, you know, popped up the little ransom thing, when it tried to call home to its command and control system, it wasn't able to register the password that it encrypted everything with. So it held on to it. So then they came back later and used one of the, I think they were publicly available, you know, ransomware cleaners. And it was like, oh yeah, the password's still on the computer. Good job, guys.
Nice.
I think that the best advice is to, if you see ransomware starting up on your computer, disconnect it from the internet immediately. While it's still running and hasn't been able to contact the internet, a lot of the times you can recover all of those files because it hasn't gotten rid of the key yet.
Mm. All right. So, wow, we just had a commercial for why you should be using a product like SecureSurf. Intentional sabotage by an employee. Only hear about that in the movies.
Well, and it seems like a pretty easy way for, you know, a disgruntled employee to make a couple extra bucks, I suppose. I'm not familiar with anybody having done it since, but I'm sure that there's that one bad apple out there.
Wow. And, you know, I used to have a customer where we literally locked down USB drives, and they did it with the intention of not wanting employees to take data off. So this is definitely a reason why you would block them to keep employees from putting bad stuff on. So
indeed.
And of course, adding a layer of protection with SecureSurf. So do that. All right, Charles. Well, I want to thank you. I think we got just technical enough for the techies out there, but had enough of a product overview to give general information for those that maybe just didn't understand what SecureSurf was or DNS filter in general.
Sure.
So this will be great. Well,
thank you very much, Marvin. I really appreciated talking with you too.
All right. And be sure to tell Sunshine and Justin and Berta and all the people over there at the mothership hello for me. And see that your weather is looking just as good as mine today.
Yeah, it's nice and bright out, at least.
Nice and bright and sunny. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking with Charles Armour, one of the enterprise architects at AppRiver, and we just had a nice little discussion on SecureSurf. Charles, once again, thank you, and hope to be visiting you guys again soon.
Sounds good, Marvin. Thank you again, too.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after these messages. If you need help selling and supporting Office 365, AppRiver can help. They've got the most experienced support team in the business. Call them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and speak to someone live here in the U.S. Try them free for 30 days by visiting appriver.com/podnutspro. All right, folks, we are back, and I want to say thank you to Charles with AppRiver. And folks, if that sounded like something you would like to get involved with and secure your email, your websites, your customer's domain, be sure to head over to appriver.com/podnutspro and talk to one of the great salespeople. I'm sure you all remember the interview I did a few weeks ago with Sunshine, my sales rep, Robin Phillips. I will say that John Dubinsky sure remembers because he called up and he's now doing business with AppRiver. So thank you, Mr. Doobie. All right, we're going to go ahead and end off the show here. I want to just keep it short and sweet. If you have any questions, suggestions, show topics, all those good things, you can email them to me. Just email marvin@podnuts.com. You can follow us on the Twitter, with the handle at PodNutsPro. And if you want to follow me, you can follow me on the Facebook. Just look for Marvin B. And you'll see me and my lovely wife on the Facebook, and you can follow along. She doesn't do stuff on my timeline. It's just showing everybody that I got a beautiful wife. So anyway, folks, thank you very much for downloading, listening, and subscribing to the show. Be sure to head over to podnuts.com and listen to some of the other great shows that we have over there. I will be taping again once we get back from the IT Owners Compass, and be listening for our upcoming show with Jefferson Pike and Fortalice Solutions. And until next time, holla.